Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and from the law firm of Primer, Piper, Eggleston, and Kramer, providing comprehensive legal counsel to New Hampshire businesses and their owners for more than 30 years. For more information or to speak to an attorney, visit primer.com. And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. Today, we conclude our in-depth series on New Hampshire's workforce shortage with a look to the future. Of all the efforts we've heard about this week aimed at building a more robust workforce, which might bear the most fruit? Should we focus on attracting people to the state or developing people already here? What are cities and towns already doing to improve their local labor pool and build stronger communities in the process? Also, we'll look at the nature of work itself. With automation and artificial intelligence already part of our daily lives, how might the expansion of these change the whole workforce shortage conversation? Let's hear from you, too. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or call in 1-800-892-6477. And you can also watch our program on Facebook Live today. All week, in addition to hearing from you, our listeners, we've heard the voices of people at job fairs around the state, pulled together by our producer, Ali Oshinsky.
What would be something attractive enough to keep you in state?
There isn't.
You know, a company that supports their employees first is huge. And then everything else comes after that.
A friendly environment, just nice people to work with.
A good 401k, make sure that you have a good benefits package for health care, consistent hours so that, you know, your home family values become a little bit more pertinent than some other things, but certainly the loyalty to the job is important as well.
The benefits is definitely a big thing, getting your dental and stuff like that. If they offer good benefits, that's a pretty big plus. So,
a higher pay rate, less hours. Because, I mean, you got to understand, like, when you start a family, you want to, like, you really want time to spend with your kids. Like, you don't want to spend your whole life just really just sitting behind a desk or working in a kitchen or in a hospital.
The voices of job seekers at job fairs around the state, produced by Ali Oshinsky. Our guests this hour are Taylor Caswell, Commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Business and Economic Affairs. And Commissioner Caswell, nice to see you. Welcome.
Good morning.
Also with us, Mary Flanagan, a distinguished professor of digital humanities at Dartmouth College, who has studied automation and artificial intelligence and its impact on our work and our lives. And Professor Flanagan, really nice to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
Also with us, Will Stewart, executive director of Stay, Work, Play. Will, welcome back.
Great to be back.
And also with us, Todd Leach, chancellor of the University System of New Hampshire. And Chancellor Leach, thank you for being here. Good to see you as well.
Glad to be here.
Well, all of you, we've heard so much this week on different ways to expand New Hampshire's workforce. It's been really interesting. We've talked about attracting new talent. We've talked about better developing the people we have here already. We've talked about reaching out to underemployed groups like immigrants or people with disabilities or older people. Commissioner Caswell, you first. What do you think? Where's the best place to look for the workers of our future labor force?
Well, excuse me. I think really one of the first places we need to look is internally. We have a lot of people that are here in New Hampshire that have the skills, or maybe they are willing to get the skills to be able to take advantage of all these great jobs we have in the state. And we do have thousands and thousands of open jobs right now. And another place where we spend a lot of time focusing on is the fact that we have around 116,000 people on a daily basis, residents in New Hampshire, who work in another state. By the same token, there are about 80,000 people in other states that work in New Hampshire. So it's a very transient workforce we have here in this region of the country, and we take advantage of all the different individuals on either side of the state border to try to fill these jobs. And so there's a lot of homegrown talent that we have right here in our communities that can help us. We just have to sort of do a better job at connecting those dots for people.
Well, and you're touching on something that came up again and again this week that was very interesting to me, this mismatch, Commissioner Caswell, of people's education or skills and the jobs that are available. So I'd like to hear a little bit more from you on that.
Absolutely.
Please.
And this is something I know Chancellor Leach can probably pipe in as well. But we're working really hard to align our resources that we have here in New Hampshire. And that's between employers, between state policymakers, and most importantly, with our academic institutions. My department and I spend a lot of time working with the university system, the community college system, with our CTE programs at high schools around the state, and with our private academic institutions to try to align the type of training and education and curriculum that they're providing, to be able to align that with the types of jobs we see coming and that are currently in existence. And those are very high-tech, advanced jobs that require an educated workforce. And honestly, that's becoming increasingly our calling card. When we talk to companies around the country who are looking for an East Coast presence, there's a lot of components that go into that decision. But in the end, what's really put a lot of companies over the edge in terms of expanding or in terms of deciding to come here has been the fact that we have a very educated and quality workforce here.
Well, it's interesting as we talk about aligning the educational needs with the needs of the workforce. Our producer, Ali Oshinsky, talked to Peter Dow. He's an instructor at Great Bay Community College in Rochester. He said he offers short-term certificates in advanced manufacturing. The course takes about 6 months. Often, he said, students graduate debt-free. They get reimbursement from their employers. Peter says the problem is he can't find enough students. Right. So they've got this debt-free program to train people for these jobs they can go into right away, but they can't find enough students to take the offer. So let's hear Peter describe what he thinks he's up against.
People connect four-year college with a particular lifestyle, and it's the lifestyle that people are after. And so they say, oh, I need to go to this four-year program in order to be living this middle-class American lifestyle. And that's not the case. Plenty of people in the trades, you know, plumbers, electricians, live a very high-quality lifestyle. I think seeing those kinds of jobs as solidly in the middle class, I think that needs to be part of the plan.
I'd love to get your thoughts on that, Will Stewart, with Stay, Work, Play.
It's certainly the case, and I think that, you know, while we do, and I'm sure, again, Chancellor Leach will talk about the need to, you know, attract and retain more students to go to our, you know, four-year academic institutions, you know, that's absolutely true. And, you know, I'll, you know, say that Stay, Work, Play did a survey about a year and a half ago that, you know, really talked about this mismatch of jobs and skills as well. But, you know, one of the things that we see, and I think that is overlooked, and there's that stigma, you know, with the trades and with advanced manufacturing. And I was up in Lebanon yesterday talking to the folks at Hypertherm, which is one of our board of advisors members at Stay, Work, Play. And, you know, they were saying the same thing, that, you know, they try to get as many students and even parents, you know, into their facilities to see, you know, what type of, you know, jobs are there, the type of money that can be made. I'll also say that, you know, they're finding, you know, similar challenges with regard to, you know, workforce and education. And they've actually started their own program, you know, to help
in-house
educate
training.
Folks. Correct.
Well, and the unemployment rate in the Upper Valley is even lower than it is statewide. And that was a theme that came up a lot on our show on Tuesday, this idea of, you know, the mismatch of skills, but also the stigma associated with some types of jobs. Chancellor Leach, I'd love to ask you the question that I started out asking Commissioner Caswell, and that is, what's the best place to look for the workers of the future?
Well, I think one of the things we have to be really focused on is our pipeline. And if we look at New Hampshire, we're not unique in terms of the workforce problem. It's a regional problem. And we're not going to be able to solve it very easily by bringing people in over the borders, because every state is now competing with us. And they are trying to pull in New Hampshire students, trying to pull away, I should say, New Hampshire students to be part of their pipeline. So we have to figure out how we can keep more of those students here in New Hampshire. Part of that is promotion. Part of that is price. Part of that is making sure that we have the capacity in those program areas where we really have the highest needs. We're working with the governor and the legislature to try to address some of those aspects of this. But we have, over the past several years, been losing our pipeline, and we are now exporting about 61% of our four-year college-going students.
That's one of the highest rates in the country, right, Chancellor Leach?
It is the highest percentage in the country.
The highest. Wow.
And it's in the region, obviously, it's highest in the country, it's highest in the region. And I think it's both a good and a bad news story. It's bad news that we have lost that percentage of students to stay in New Hampshire. But it's good news in that I think there is room for us to bring some of those back or keep more of those here if we're really focused on it. Because I think for us, that could go a long ways to helping the workforce shortages if we can keep them here. If you look at unemployment, it's down across all sectors. So I think when we're looking at plumbers, electricians, there's no question we have workforce challenges there. But if you look at the bachelor degree level and higher, for those who have bachelor's degrees, unemployment is less than 2%. And that's a real bottleneck. So for us to keep that pipeline here, it matters. One of the things that we found is that for students who stay and study in New Hampshire, 68% of them are more likely to stay and work here. So there is a statewide initiative, 65 by 25, you may have heard of, but it's really looking at how do we keep students here, but it's also looking at the whole spectrum of workforce needs that we have, trying to ensure that 65% of them are credentialed for the workforce needs that we have today.
Well, Professor Flanagan, I haven't forgotten about you. And I want to ask you a slightly different question that I've asked everybody else, because you have a different expertise here looking at the future of work itself. So what's your take, Professor Flanagan, on this question of where New Hampshire should look for workers, or even if that is the right question to ask? I wonder what you think.
Well, it's interesting that the World Economic Forum's recent research on the future of jobs show that while we may be looking at a future in which a whole bunch of jobs are displaced, up to 75 million perhaps, 133 million jobs globally will be created. So there's good news and bad news about the future of job creation and automation. But one of the most important things we have to think about is the predictions are going something like 42% of skills in any job will be disrupted in the next 4 to 5 years. So wherever we're getting employees, wherever we're attracting people to work in our workforce, I think what we have to realize is that what we think of as a workforce is a kind of fundamentally different animal in some ways. We're looking at a flexible, fluid workforce where people have to have a kind of expectation that it's going to be a lifelong learning challenge to have careers, have jobs. And right now, we're really not set up to kind of think about careers in that way. Yeah, even in shifting economic models such as platform work and platform economy. So I think there's a real chance here to reconceptualize what we think about work and how we think about learning.
When you say flexible, lifelong skill adaptation and so forth, some people might think, Professor Flanagan, oh, that sounds like the gig economy, you know, uncertain contract-based jobs, not full-time employment, forget about benefits. So what do you mean when you say work might be more flexible and fluid?
Well, what I mean by that is that we're seeing a lot of new technologies entering fields that we might not have thought about, such as home healthcare, caregiving. You're seeing robotics enter elderly care. You're seeing all kinds of shifts and changes that we've seen as fields that are very personable, that are very based on the human. And the predictions are that a lot of these kinds of areas will be changing due to automation and AI. So for me, I think it's important that we think about this destabilized sense of expertise in a really positive way. And it doesn't necessarily mean we have to follow the few models of the gig economy. In fact, a lot of people in the higher levels, like at the World Economic Forum meetings, are talking about policy regulation to protect workers' rights as an international effort with the cases of platform economy and platform jobs.
Go ahead, Commissioner Kazza.
Well, I was just going to point out that I think exactly what Professor Flanagan is talking about in terms of reconfiguring the way that we view this long-term, whether you want to call it training or education, and tie it to what Will was talking about earlier, which is, you know, we have almost a cultural divide here where people, kids that are graduating from high school are in an environment where they feel as though they have to get that four-year degree and that it has to be, you know, something that they do when they're 18 years old and they're done by 22 and all the other issues that come with that. I think that what she's saying there is absolutely right. What we need to do is look at the education as something that grows with the position. You can have somebody that goes and gets a two-year degree in advanced manufacturing at Great Bay Community College or at Nashua Community College, and you can go take a job with a large employer and make pretty good money on a second shift. And that company in this environment is going to do everything they can to keep you. So over time, the education that you require, whether it's the type of work you're doing or the type of role that you're going to play in the company, is something that emerges along with the job. So I'm not too scared by all of that. And I think what we're trying to do in our state is align that to be able to accommodate it.
Well, it's interesting. We did a really interesting show a couple weeks ago about broader efforts to bring the humanities to the community college system for that reason, that you need to be a lifelong learner, to think broadly, to read deeply, no matter what kind of job you're doing. So it's very interesting. I want to go to our listeners. They've had a lot of input during this series, and it's been great. We'd love to hear from you as we conclude our in-depth series on how New Hampshire's workforce shortage might be changing in the future, what work might look like in the future, and just what we've learned this week. Again, we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Kelly on Facebook says, Massachusetts has more to offer with lower in-state college tuition, higher paying jobs, laws supporting couples to grow their family with infertility treatment. I found Massachusetts healthcare systems offering better benefits than New Hampshire. My family is looking to leave New Hampshire for many of these reasons. We will pay Massachusetts taxes for the benefits the state offers. Maria on Facebook also says people living in New Hampshire are willing to pay taxes to Massachusetts already just so they can make more money by working in Massachusetts. Pay your employees more. Keep them here. Boy, Chancellor Leach, I'll throw this to you. This is also a huge, huge concern that we heard from people this week. They said the workforce shortage is not rocket science. Pay people more and they'll stick around. I wonder what you think.
Well, I think one factor that I would add in there is connections. That, you know, one of the things that keeps people here in the state is if they feel connected to the state. And so when I look at our graduates and I look at those that grew up in New Hampshire and attended our colleges, 68% of them will stay and live here because they find that New Hampshire has a lot of value to it that might not be so visible from the outside. I moved here from Massachusetts myself almost a decade ago. I don't regret it at all. I love being here in New Hampshire, and it's a place where you can get connected. So I think one of our challenges is to ensure that while students are here, even if they're coming from out of state, so we have about 20% of those students who come from out of state to our institutions stay and work here, is trying to connect them with businesses. We're working with closely with a number of businesses and trying to align programs with them. I think we shouldn't underestimate the value of those connections while they're here.
Didn't that come up in the survey that Stay Work Play did, Will, on what younger adults want from being in New Hampshire?
It did. And actually, the biggest surprise that came out of that survey, you're right, of factors that young people take into consideration when making the decision to leave or to stay, really informed our new strategic plan, which has four pillars, one of which is connect. Connect people to each other, connect people to institutions, be they, you know, jobs or, you know, community institutions, you know, as a means of ultimately connecting them to the state. And the biggest surprise that came out of the survey, though, and that really informed this, was the fact that 21% of respondents said that they didn't have a single friend. And so that's, you know, that's sad, you know, on a individual standpoint.
I remember that. I was surprised. Yeah, go ahead.
Right. But from a workforce retention standpoint, and I think a college graduate retention standpoint, it's very concerning because, you know, if you don't have any friends, and the qualifier was friends in a close proximity to you, but if you don't have any friends, you know, your job might just be a job. And I think that, you know, to a certain point, you know, salary is always going to matter, yes. But even if you're making great money, if you don't have any friends or anyone to spend that time with and money with, then, you know, I think you're that much more likely to, you know, leave if another job comes up, if it's all about money, that offers you more money or to advance your career or take you a place back to where your friends and family actually are. So I think that connection piece is huge and something that we can all play a part in helping folks with.
Well, I'd love to talk to all of you more about that after a short break, including you, Professor Flanagan, because I know you've looked at, in the new workforce of the future, communities and strong communities will be valued even more than they are now. So we will pick up on that thread after a short break, and we'll keep hearing from you. Join us, 1-800-892-6477. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter. It's NHPR Exchange, and we'll be right back.
Music.
New Hampshire Public Radio listeners are curious, civically minded, and digitally savvy. As an NHPR underwriter, your business or organization can connect to this statewide and engaged audience through our many podcasts, our e-newsletter, or at our award-winning news site, nhpr.org. Learn more by visiting the business support page at nhpr.org/underwrite.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, we conclude our series on New Hampshire's workforce shortage with what's on the horizon. What might the state do to create a more robust workforce? How might the nature of work itself change? Let's get your thoughts on these questions. You can send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. You can use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. You can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. And in addition to listening today, you can watch our program on Facebook Live. All of you, but Professor Flanagan, you first. I was really struck, as Will Stewart was with Stay Work Play, about that finding of young adult in the survey of young adults here in New Hampshire. A lot of them said they really didn't have anybody they were connected to, they felt close to. And the concern is that people just see their jobs. It's just as a job. If somebody offers them higher wages somewhere else, boom, they're gone. I wonder what you think about that, Professor Flanagan, and the value of community as we look at the workforce of the future.
Yeah, I think it's a really important point that we have to take into account, that we have not only a distributed kind of sense of community, right? We have our physical communities, but we also have online communities, and how people are connected and feel a part of their community on both senses. Perhaps they may be the only kind of creative person at a larger company, but they know other creatives either in the area or online to kind of make that system of support. We see a lot of creatives actually leaving hip places like Brooklyn and having a fantasy of kind of having a healthy environment and green policies and moving out into the countryside. They go to Vermont.
Hang on,
really,
how come?
There's a romantic notion of Vermont, I'm not going to go into the details of whether it's true or not, but there is an idea that Vermont has had, you know, history of, you know, puppet troops and lots of creative people who've moved out there, and there's a place for designers. And I wonder if some of that kind of cultivation for the kind of creative class could be instilled in a kind of New Hampshire context.
Okay, so Mary, I wish you were here in studio, because people's faces definitely registered your comment about they go to Vermont, it seems bucolic, they have really good coffee and cheese there and beer and so forth. So,
exactly.
What do you think, Chancellor Leach?
Well, you know, I think we have a lot of those pockets here in New Hampshire, but I don't think they get the same visibility. But if you look at Plymouth, for example, and around Plymouth State, you think about the North Country and some of the art that is prevalent there. Portsmouth in around the seacoast, of course, and spent a lot of time in Keene this past year, and just another area where you see a lot of this more growth of creative industries and art emerging. And that leads me to something else that I think is really important relative to the workforce, and that's the role of small businesses and entrepreneurship. And we do see a lot of that emerging in New Hampshire. We have the Small Business Development Center at UNH. We house it there. And we see a lot of interest and activity, particularly among younger generations that are starting to look at starting their own business, starting to create their own opportunities. And I think New Hampshire has the opportunity to be a bit of a base for that. We see the Mill Yards really being revived some, a whole new potential industry there in regenerative medicine. And we've really tried to align some of what we do really to help support those kind of emerging industries and opportunities. So it isn't just about preparing people for the jobs that may have been there in the past, but it's also preparing them for these industries that are emerging and new business opportunities. But definitely, I think New Hampshire is seeing a resurgence of this kind of small business activity.
Well, it's interesting, and we've done whole shows on this topic, so we won't go there now, but it's so interesting, Professor Flanagan, that you mentioned, you know, Vermont's image. And when we talked about this topic, I'll throw this to you, Commissioner Caswell, first. People from outside, we've talked to marketers, people who do sort of branding for states, and they've said, Vermont, bucolic, cows, ice cream, Ben and Jerry's, Maine, lobster, beautiful coast, Massachusetts, the American Revolution, colleges, New Hampshire.
All of the above.
So, yeah. So I wonder what you think about that creative class that Professor Flanagan is saying might be good for New Hampshire to tap into, people who don't want to live in Brooklyn anymore, maybe don't even want to live in Boston anymore. What can you do to make them come to New Hampshire?
Well, we're very tapped into that, quite honestly. I think, as Chancellor Leach pointed out, there are definitely places where you can go in New Hampshire and have that lifestyle, have a decent job, a decent wage. You can start a small business in a small town, and you can live the lifestyle that we offer in New Hampshire, which is quite different than what you get in Maine or Vermont. But if you look at particularly, I'll point out Littleton, New Hampshire right now, because Littleton has seen a great resurgence over the last couple of years, and Their median age in Littleton and Bethlehem is actually dropping.
Really?
And one of the
Up
reasons,
in the North Country.
Yeah. And one of the reasons that's happening, I think, is because people and these young people that are coming to town, whether from within the state or from outside of the state, are finding great opportunity to connect with their community. And I'm talking about whether they're running for some office or they're getting involved in different initiatives in town. To try to make that place the kind of community that they want to live in. Throw in a bunch of entrepreneurs that have come to the area. And I was just up there last Sunday, and we had an event around a mountain biking trail network up that way. And the place was full of little kids, of young families that are out there enjoying that type of a lifestyle. You know, they work in different types of environments. Some of them own their own business. But it is totally working. And I think a big part of that is and again, going back to Professor Flanagan's angle here about how we're transitioning to a more digital type of economy, that there are a large number of people who are really craving that individual person-to-person community connection live and in person, not entirely online. And New Hampshire communities are really well positioned to accommodate that. And it's something we're running very, very hard at as part of our overall strategy.
Oh, that's really interesting. So Will Stewart, as people's professional and often personal lives migrate more online, there's a counter craving for that real experience in community.
There certainly is. And I think that, I say that I hate to stereotype generations, but I'm about to stereotype a generation. And I will say that I think that it's fair to say that younger people today, perhaps, you know, I think more than older generations, really appreciate and value the ability to make a difference and to get involved and to be connected. You know, perhaps as, you know, kind of the pendulum swinging, you know, away from online, they want both. I do agree with the professor on that. You know, one of the things we were doing at Stay Work Play on that connect piece, and as a way to even brand the state as a place for where you can make a difference, you know, perhaps more than any other place or other places, at least that it's easier to do so here, that you can do so as a young person. You know, you don't have to wait until you're 40 to do something cool. You don't have to wait until you're 40, 50 plus to run for office or to create an event or start an initiative or create a nonprofit, that you can do that here in New Hampshire. You can do it, you know, faster and cheaper than you can do in a lot of other places, you know, because you can meet, you know, the people that you need to meet. And, you know, for me, that's really one of our greatest advantages here in New Hampshire.
Well, we talked to a lot of people, again, in advance of the series and during this series on this idea of community. And it's interesting, Commissioner Caswell, you mentioned some communities in the North Country actually lowering their median age because of this sense of community. We talked to a young woman, Jessica Wright. She lives in the Mount Washington Valley. She's part of the organization Stay MWV. And Jessica said the region's sense of community and natural beauty are what draw her and a lot of other young adults. Let's hear.
Many people that I talk to who do a lot of traveling in and out of this area can all relate to this feeling of coming up over this ridge when you're driving up Route 16, and all of a sudden you see the Chocorua Lake Basin, and you take this deep breath, and you can breathe a little bit easier, and things slow down, and there's a sense of peace and home, and the runaround isn't quite as much, and I can't go to Hannaford at 5 o'clock without seeing everybody I know, but the community really is dedicated to one another, and that's something that you just don't find in a bigger city
Again, that's Jessica Wright. And I have to say, when I listened to that audio this morning, I thought, oh, I just want to get in the car and drive up there. It sounds wonderful. She also noted a trend of noticing young adults moving from Portsmouth or Boston to the Mount Washington Valley. And with that move, taking a pay cut in exchange for the community and the joys of nature and so forth. Now, not to be a downer, but one of the issues that we do hear about economic development in these beautiful rural areas is the lack of solid high-speed internet access. And to you first, Mary Flanagan, again, there are these hotspots that want to become cultural hubs, want to host sort of the workforce of the future, but they don't have the digital infrastructure to get there. I wonder what you think.
Well, certainly digital infrastructure is kind of a necessity in this day and age for a lot of up-and-coming businesses, a lot of up-and-coming, creative, but also, healthcare providers and pretty much every work infrastructure we have. You know, I think that trying to understand and maybe look at other models, not even in the United States, but even out in other countries, may be quite interesting, how certain nations, even small nations, have kind of jumped ahead and gone to like an all Wi-Fi state or all Wi-Fi country. You know, you could really do some amazing initiatives thinking through the policy implications to have an ethos that is a wired ethos with our natural surroundings. So really thinking about that balance between green policies and healthy environments and also efficient work so that there can be efficient play.
Where does this stand now, Commissioner Caswell? This has been an issue we've talked about for a long time here in the Exchange.
Yeah, and honestly, it's a very frustrating issue because we keep talking about it. One of the problem is, I think, right now is that we have, within the major population centers in New Hampshire, we have really good wireless broadband access, high-speed internet. But as you say, once you sort of get out of that 93 corridor and 89, you start to see drop-offs here and there. And getting the attention from whether it's policymakers or others to effectively finish off that last mile, at the end of the road that doesn't still have it yet, but if that individual has to move because they can't access the internet or they want to do work at home, I mean, the bottom line is if you want to participate in our economy right now, and this is only going to get more true, you're going to need to be able to have high-speed internet access. And that is something we have to continue to pound the drum on because we need to have that statewide to accommodate all of these things that we're talking about.
So whose responsibility is it so that we can see this rural revival that we're talking about?
As the professor talked about, there's models everywhere. I know there has been an effort, I believe it was Senator Kahn from Keene, that came up with legislation last year that allows individual towns to bond to be able to finish off particular pieces in their own community. I think that works great in some communities, doesn't work so great in others. There's also there's going to be a new effort to increase the ability for first responders to be able to communicate in some of those areas where there isn't that capability right now. And we're working to try to be able to have some commercial tag along to those new towers and those new effects. And again, that might help solve some more of the problem. But getting it in every sort of valley and mountaintop in the state is going to continue to be a challenge for us.
So is it the state's responsibility to do this?
I think it's a combination of the state and the private industry to be able to get out to customers and serve them the way that they serve them, whether it's electricity or whether it's telephone. This is becoming increasingly not that much different from those two necessities.
I want to read an email that relates to something you said earlier, Will Stewart, and this is, again, we talked about branding the state, marketing the state, and so forth. And you mentioned this is a place where young people can make a difference. Cody wrote in on Facebook. He says he'd like this to be taken seriously by policymakers. Cody says, I've been in several meetings that have tried to answer this question of how to keep young people here, and the dialogue is sometimes laughable. The younger people in the room are generally ignored on this topic and used as props. Don't wonder why we're leaving one minute and then double down on the millennial bashing the next. Cody, good to hear from you. Do you hear millennial bashing on one hand, while on the other hand, policymakers say, please stay, please don't go anywhere, please don't go to Vermont?
I think there's some truth in that. Yeah, I think, bashing, the quote unquote entitled millennials and, the everybody gets a trophy generation. I mean, it's kind of a tired trope. And I think that, if the situation were reversed, it wouldn't be quite as funny if people started talking about, boomers and others that way. I think to his point, too, if if people are serious about, you know, wanting to have young people stay, you know, here and in their companies, particularly when they're having these discussions in the workplaces, is, you know, to his point about, you know, being ignored, is to get them involved. Again, I think if people have that sense of involvement and ultimately belonging, you know, that we are valued here, that our experiences are valued here, that will go a long way to getting people to stay. And of course, this is not to say we don't need to address all of the other, you know, issues why people are leaving. And a lot of those are things like housing affordability and so forth. But that's a big one.
Let's take a call. This is, let's see, Theo in Manchester. Hi, Theo. You're on the air. Welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Laura. Thank you so much for doing this series. It's
sure.
So important. I just wanted to say it's kind of frustrating because I think this workforce issue isn't so much of a mystery as it's made out to be. We export our high school students. We're 50th in state support for education. We've got the highest in-state tuition in the country. We have the highest student debt. I grew up here in New Hampshire. I went to high school in New Hampshire. I just have to look at my graduating class and where they went and the kind of offers they got, even from neighboring state university systems. Most of them went out of state and stayed out of state. As any company will tell you, it's cheaper to retain workers than it is to attract new ones. We spend so much time chasing the idea of attracting new people to the state, and we aren't doing enough policy-wise to keep our high schoolers in the state with college as expensive as it is.
Well, Theo, it's good to hear from you. And Chancellor Leach is here. So, Chancellor Leach, I'm guessing you agree with Theo.
Well, I think he hits on a core problem with our workforce issue, and that is if those students go out of state to pursue their college degree, they're much more likely to stay out of state because they make connections there. They might have internships. They might
sure.
meet people. So I think there's a lot of impact to doing what we can to keep those students here in the state. And we've tried to do a lot on our part. I think we all know that we have limited state support relative to other public systems, but we try to use every one of those dollars specifically towards things that will help keep students here, particularly the tuition price, and trying to apply it there. We have a program in place, and part of this is making sure that some of the word gets out, because we hear it from students all the time that their teachers or their guidance counselors didn't know this or didn't share this with them, that we have programs like Granite Guarantee, for example, that for students who are Pell eligible, meaning that they're eligible for federal financial aid, we will gap the difference in tuition for them at any of our residential institutions. And that is a big factor for student affordability. They still have to pay their housing and meal plans if they're going to live on campus. But in terms of the tuition and trying to gap that, you know, we've been working with trying to find other innovative ways to try to keep our costs down. One of those is open education resources, something that we've been migrating more and more towards, which is those materials that are virtually free that we can provide students with to support their classes, as opposed to the books that typically become a big price factor for them. I do want to mention one thing, because I think it's important as you look at cost, and that is that there's a cost of attendance calculator that the federal government does. And it allows you to look and see, and this is something important for parents or students who care about how much it's going to cost them to go to an institution, but it factors in everything. How much is it going to reasonably cost you to attend that institution for a year, including your housing, including if it's commuting, your commuting, your books, et cetera. So we're very proud of being on the real low end of that cost of attendance. But I absolutely agree. We need to partner with the state. We need to work together to really try to figure out how to keep students here, and affordability is a key factor to that.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that call, Theo. We'll take more of your calls after a short break. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. Lots of Facebook comments that I'll share with you as well. People jumping in on the question, what might it take to create a more robust workforce here in New Hampshire? So we'll share those after a short break. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Thank you.
our mission is to support the communities we serve, and that's so aligned to what NHPR does.
Wendy Beswick, Vice President of Marketing for Service Credit Union.
Hampshire Public Radio is all about being in the community, talking to the community, and so we feel like it's just a great place for us to get out in front of people who may not know about the credit union.
Learn more about NHPR's corporate support program at nhpr.org/underwrite.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, it's the weekly New Hampshire News Roundup. So join us for all the state news you might have missed this week. That's tomorrow on The Exchange, live at 9. This hour, our guests take on what employers, cities and towns, and the state could do to create a more robust workforce. We're wrapping up our series today, and let's hear from you. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. You can use Facebook or Twitter. It's NHPR Exchange. We have four guests for the hour. Joining us from Hanover is Mary Flanagan, a distinguished professor of digital humanities at Dartmouth College. Joining me in studio, Taylor Caswell, commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Business and Economic Development, Will Stewart, executive director of Stay Work Play New Hampshire, and Todd Leach, chancellor of the University System of New Hampshire. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. And all of you, let's go right back to our callers. Mary's joining us from Winchester. Hi, Mary. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning.
Just a quick point to add to this conversation. The screener said you might have talked about this a little bit already this week. I'm with a group. So I live in Winchester, and humorously enough, I actually work over in Brattleboro. And there's a group of us that have been meeting for several years and around this issue of diverse workforce development. And what we've been looking at is how are we giving attention to recruitment and retention of diverse communities or diverse members of our community so that they can also be a part of the workforce and bring incredible richness of skills and perspective that is not typical in these homogenous work environments. And so I just want to add that to the conversation, because as much as we talk about, you know, keeping our young people here, which we of course we want to do, I think it's also important to think about, do we create work environments where people who are not of the predominant population able to be part of the community in the workplace, in the communities where they live? Is it a place where they feel welcome?
Well, this is a great point, and I want to hear from everybody on this. Maybe you first, Professor Flanagan. I know a young man, very talented, probably in his early 30s, very smart, very talented, very caring, very community-oriented. He and his wife recently moved. He's a New Hampshire native. Recently moved to New York City because they wanted to have a family and raise that family in a more diverse environment. So it matters to some people. And I wonder what you think, Professor Flanagan, about Mary's point.
Yeah, well, you know, the population of New Hampshire is something like 90.3% white, and we only have about 7 or 8% of the folks in New Hampshire speaking a non-English language. So just from the numbers alone, we see that there is a kind of homogeneity that isn't really matching the country's growth and dynamism. For me, I think that, you know, colleges and universities are a great place to really start bringing people together from a national, international perspective. The question is, do we have the right things in place then to attract those students and have those students feel welcome and at home, you know, from various services, shopping, the kinds of, you know, foods and stores, you know, different populations really require. I think we're lacking in this. And again, that sense of community comes up. Like people want to feel like they have a place to go that's comfortable. And I think some of this really has to be designed as a kind of forward thinking. I don't think communities are organically going to happen when we have people reporting on, you know, in some of our surveys, as I heard today, about, you know, not having any friends, things like this. We really have to do some cultural engineering, I think, in our state.
Wow. Go ahead, Will. And I know Commissioner Caswell, you want to jump in on that too, but go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. I do think we have to be, you know, much more intentional.
Cultural engineering, though, that sounds a little, I don't know,
all right,
Orwellian.
Sounds, it
or...
sounds creepy, but, you know, I'm a designer.
Well, I'll say that I think we have to be, you know, intentional and be welcoming, you know, to a diverse population. And it's one of the reasons that, you know, Stay Work Play is getting involved in this, too, is that, you know, that survey that I mentioned, one of the reasons that young people mentioned as a potentially a reason for potentially leaving the state was a lack of cultural diversity. So people want to, young people want to live in a place that has that diversity, you know, for themselves, for their kids. So I think it is very important. And I know, Commissioner, that the Division of Economic Development has had a pretty good focus as of late, you know, on this issue, too.
Yep. Absolutely. And there's many reasons for that. And it's really rooted in the fact that you do hear me go on and on and on about how connected community is to our economic development and our economic future. And this, you know, I'm not always just talking about an individual town or a downtown. I'm talking about all sorts of different communities, including cultural communities, including certain ages and demographics and young people and older people, and finding ways to enable their entry into this workforce if they so choose. And we have traditionally been a very welcoming state here in New Hampshire and a community that values diversity. This is reflected in all of my conversations with employers around the state. Employers, particularly larger employers, really need to be able to demonstrate as they try to recruit people into the state to work at their facilities that they have that sort of diverse and inclusive type of atmosphere across all sorts of different individuals and groups that are within their existing workforce. They have to have that level of comfort. So it really comes to community. It comes to the fact that we want to be a welcoming and opening and an open community in general as a state to anyone that wants to be here.
Didn't the governor have a task force on this or something, Commissioner Caswell?
Yeah, there is a commission on diversity and inclusion that we work very closely with that he formed up, and we have a number of other initiatives that we're working on within the Division of Economic Development, and we do partner with organizations like the university system and with Stay Work Play. And in fact, we were just at a college just earlier this week, and this was a major subject of discussion that, you know, you see the first beginnings of that diverse population in our university system and in our colleges where people are coming from other places, and that they're seeing that and they're accommodating that. And as those individuals move through the pipeline, it's important for employers and communities in the state to be able to find ways to accommodate all of that. So it's kind of a networking thing at this point. It's sort of trying to get an educated leadership on how you can, whether you're an employer leadership or a community leadership or a state leadership, and how you can find ways to be more accommodating to everybody.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate her raising that point because it comes up a lot. I want to share a bunch of Facebook comments with all of you that we've gotten from our listeners and just roll through them quickly and see what you think. We asked on Facebook, what would need to change to keep young people in the state? And here's just a few of our listeners' answers. Jennifer says it would take the passage of paid parental and medical leave. Abby says better transportation or commuter rail. Jobs in industries other than healthcare, education, and manufacturing. Also, Abby says a minimum wage above $7.25. Kelso says affordable housing. I'll even take affordable rent near my workplace. Griffin says debt forgiveness, lower tuition. Took says a better nightlife, 24-hour things to do, bars open until 2 a.m. or later. Paul from Glenn says the issue isn't education. It's a lack of affordable housing. You can't live in New Hampshire on one job, so they and their friends are leaving. So there's just a couple comments from our listeners. Housing, Will Stewart, that's something that has come up again and again and again in our series this week.
It's and it was going back to our Stay Work Play survey of young people, and that was probably the number two issue was housing affordability. And it's one of the reasons that Stay Work Play has gotten involved in nonpartisan issues-based advocacy at the state level this year to advocate for for issues that will help promote housing affordability in the state, as well as some of the other issues that your listeners mentioned, including the issues of student debt and the kind of the other side of that coin, the funding for the university system.
Yeah. What do you think, Chancellor Leach, of some of these issues that our listeners mentioned? Transportation, commuter rail. Again, you're in charge of education. Debt relief comes up a lot, but along with the other aspects that our Facebook listeners bring up.
And in fact, you know, we're one of the state's larger employers across the university system. And so we experience some of these things ourselves. And I think a lot of it does fall on the employers to really try to figure out how to maximize the value that they provide to have those employers come. We end up having to recruit people sometimes from out of state. We're trying to recruit around the state, in-state, in terms of our work base ourselves, our workforce base. But things like family leave. We have our own family leave program that we provide because we knew that was important to employees.
Oh, that's interesting. So as a large employer, you offer that.
Right. And I think that you'll find that there are some large employers in the state that are offering some of those things. So I think there is a little bit of this assumption that if it's not mandated out across the state, that you won't find it here. But I think if people look at different employers, what's important to them, they'll find that there are employers doing some innovative things here. Fidelity, for example, has its own kind of loan forgiveness, a variation of a loan forgiveness program, and that also was trying to recruit students. And part of it is the students that come out of our system. We have over 100 interns in just their IT group per year that come out of UNH, and many of them stay and end up working there. So there is this pipeline that's there, and it's trying to figure out how you maximize what's valuable to them. I think listening is really important, and figuring out what you can do with the limited resources. We're not going to be able to do the same things that some of the institutions in Boston do, for example. But hopefully we offer a different kind of a lifestyle here as well.
Well, we have heard from people all week, some people who said, I'm going to Massachusetts, the wages are higher, the benefits are better. But we have heard from more than one person, Chancellor Leach, who has said, I'm staying here because I like less traffic, cleaner air, a slower pace.
There's a value to that. I commuted in and out of Boston for 15 years. And I'm commuting in and out of Concord, New Hampshire. There's a value to that. But at the same time, we know that unless somebody is here in New Hampshire, they don't necessarily recognize that value, and getting them here can be a real challenge. And how do we offer a competitive enough package to draw them here? Just one quick thing on the student loan issue, because I think that's really important.
Yeah, and it's come up
and
a lot.
The best thing we can do there, in my own view, and I think we work on, is keep the cost of education down so they have to borrow less at the front end is the most important thing we can try to do. There is a statistic that often gets lost when we talk about the student debt, because we always hear about New Hampshire having the highest student debt, and I wish we could all figure out how to bring that down. We're working to do it with Granite Guarantee and other programs. But the student loan default rate is one of the lowest in the nation for New Hampshire students. And I think that speaks to the value of the education they're getting. They're actually getting jobs and paying those loans back. And that's really critical as well. Sometimes we forget to look at things like graduation rates. How are students doing? Are they making it through their program? Because if they attend 3 years, don't graduate, and have that debt, it's a very different situation than if we can ensure that we get them to their career, we get them out of school, we get them to graduate, and they have the ability to pay that debt back.
That's really interesting. So in addition to reporting on that figure, which we often report on, highest debt ratio in the nation, also look at the flip side of that, how successful our students are at paying those loans back. And you're saying very successful.
Yes. And we have limited ability to drive that cost down. We try to be as efficient as we can, but we do see states that have significant investments to lower the price. But if we can ensure that those students are prepared for jobs, and if we can ensure that they're graduating to the greatest extent possible, then we can ensure they have the ability to pay back those loans.
Professor Flanagan, to you, we heard from one of our listeners on Facebook who mentioned paid parental leave and medical leave. And we heard earlier in the show that montage that Ali Oshinsky put together of young people saying what they wanted from work, a better work-life balance, better benefits, and so forth. What do people say they want from their work now, Professor Flanagan, and how much are they getting it from their workplaces? Maybe the workplace is willing, maybe it isn't, but maybe it wants to and it just can't. It's too small a business. What do you think?
I think that everyone wants to have a sense that when they work, it's meaningful somehow to someone, or they're part of a system that they believe in. I think that everyone wants to feel like their time matters and that their efforts matter. And so that is a constant. And so I'm curious about our conversation. We can talk about right now and we can, I appreciate the plans to tie internships and really work on some of the pressing problems or individual problems. But I don't think this is going to be solved piecemeal. We have to position ourselves for the next 4 to 5 years of rapid change and the next 30 years of pretty much unprecedented shifts in the labor economy. And so I feel like getting back to those cultural questions in order to thrive in disruption, getting back to the big picture, we'll have bold policies that can then take into account these real human things. Because at the end of the day, we know big change is happening, and we know that we have to place the human back at the center of this question.
Really interesting. So unprecedented change coming very soon, it sounds like, from what you're saying, Professor Flanagan.
Well, that's what World Economic Forum, McKinsey, and pretty much everyone who looks at global markets is saying. And I see it even in my own work as a college professor. I see rapid change. I see my students going out and, what they might be, quote, trained to do is already shifting, every 6 months. So I think of that as exciting. I don't think of that as threatening. But then it's a mindset question about how we're learning, how we're thinking. And again, we're talking about student loans. What does lifelong learning look like? Who's responsible for paying for that? I think these are societal questions, and they transcend the state level, but they also have to be addressed at the state level. What does it look like to have lifelong learning as we face major investments in each person?
Wow. Profound stuff. Go ahead, Professor Commissioner Caswell.
I'll take Professor as a title of the day. Actually, I couldn't agree more. And I think, just to put a little perspective here, every state is dealing with a lot of these very same issues. And I don't mean to demean a lot of the comments that people had on Facebook. We're working on all these things. And they're all things that I think there are workable solutions kind of within a New Hampshire context. And all of us in this room communicate regularly to try to accomplish that. But it's all perspective as well. I mean, I talk to people that come here and companies that come here, and I say, why are you here? Why are you coming here? I get all sorts of answers that are the exact opposite of what often we will hear. Things like, it's so affordable here. I can build a commercial building here for half the price that I would pay in California or in Virginia or wherever. So there's a lot of pieces here that I think we need to keep in perspective. But overall, we have a great economy right now. We have jobs for people that pay good wages. And we should be really trying to build a sustainable system to make that last as long as we possibly can.
All right. Well, Taylor Caswell, Commissioner of the New Hampshire Department of Business and Economic Development, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again, I'm sure.
Absolutely. Thanks.
Will Stewart, it's good to see you. Executive Director of Stay Work Play New Hampshire, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you.
And Todd Leach, thank you for being here. Chancellor of the University System of New Hampshire, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And Mary Flanagan, it was good to have you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Laura.
That's Mary Flanagan, Distinguished Professor of Digital Humanities at Dartmouth College. And if you missed any of our series on New Hampshire's workforce shortage, you can always go to our website, nhpr.org/exchange. Again, that's nhpr.org/exchange. The Exchange is a production of NHPR. The engineer is Dan Colgan. Our senior producer is Ellen Grimm. Our producers are Jessica Hunt, Christina Phillips, and Ali Oshinsky. Our theme music was composed by Bob Lord, and I'm Laura Kanoy.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.